Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
This is Warren Ajous, author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Today I have Jesse Peake as my guest. Jesse is a member of MUFON. MUFON stands for Mutual UFO Network. Jesse is a field investigator, ERT, of Pennsylvania. Those of you who don't know, MUFON is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization composed of civilian volunteers who study UFO sightings. It is one of the oldest and largest organizations of its kind, claiming more than 4,000 members worldwide and chapters and representatives in more than 43 countries and all 50 states. It was founded in 1969. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Hey, Al. Thank you for having me today. I was looking forward to it.
Yeah, I had a past guest on who was also a member of MUFON out of Pennsylvania.
Oh, how about that?
Stan Gordon.
Okay, yeah, I know the name.
So first, I would like to thank you for your service.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And the first question is, what led you to become a MUFON member?
So I actually didn't know about MUFON until really late in my research. I was researching the field on my own for a long time. And once I had seen, I think it was Hangar One on the Travel Channel or History Channel, they mentioned MUFON. And I had already been researching. I served, so I kind of looked at this as becoming a certified investigator as another way of serving in a sense. And I was already researching. So in 2019, I officially made it a thing and joined MUFON. Did the rest of the extensive training process to become a field investigator. And it's just something I'm passionate about doing. I had two sightings of my own, both with another person, luckily. So I wasn't thinking I was going crazy. But yeah, it's been a journey. And I enjoy the work, absolutely. Helping people is there's no better feeling in the world than helping another person. So
yeah, that was my next question. Have you ever seen a UFO?
Yeah.
Where did you see the UFO at?
So this happened, the first sighting I had was in Philadelphia, Northeast Philadelphia, during the day. I had already joined MUFON at this time. I think I was a year in, and I was with my father. We were driving down, and my dad was a bit of a skeptic when I first got into the field. You know what I mean? He really didn't know too much about it. I was, I don't know what all this is about. But we were going out one day. I think we had to make a couple errands, and we were driving down a main avenue in Philadelphia, which is a very busy city. There's multiple different airports around. So there's always objects flying in the sky, helicopters, airplanes, drones, et cetera. And as we were driving, he actually saw them before I did. I didn't even know they were there. He points to the sky and he says, "What is that?" And I look up and there's four gold unidentified objects flying in like a 2-2 formation type of deal. Uh-huh. I tried to pull my cell phone out to actually take some photos and record. And I don't know if you ever seen Skinwalker Ranch where the phone kind of like does this crazy stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
My phone did that. And I didn't know about electrical malfunctions at the time. So I'm just thinking my phone's just whacking out. And so we were driving side by side at that point. And once we hit a stoplight, they had actually switched the 2-2 formation into a single file, which to me was like, this is intelligent control, you know? Mm-hmm. And as they continued to go forward, my phone had clicked back on. And when I put my phone up, the first and second object blinked out just like that. They didn't fly away or zoom away. They just dissipated. And I was able to get a still photo of the last two objects before they disappeared. Later on, when I got home, when my phone was doing all that wacky stuff, it was actually recording the entire process. And I didn't know that. So I played the recording and you can hear me fighting with the phone and talking about the objects. And I had no idea. And it wasn't until later on I found out that UFOs cause electrical malfunctions in some sightings. Mm-hmm. And that actually made me start another project, which I guess we could talk about a little later. But it was just mind-blowing to me. And, you know, that opened his eyes up, my dad. And now he goes to conferences with me and does all and supports me and likes to go to these lectures with me now. So it was kind of a great bonding experience in a sense.
Yeah, I know just being in the paranormal field, you know, whether it be ghosts or cryptids or UFOs, you know, until you have that experience, you know, because, you know, the paranormal is the unexplained.
Right.
What is your opinion of the newly formed group from the Pentagon on the newly released UFO UAP findings?
Yeah, the Arrow, the new task force. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah, I watched the hearings they had. Finally, I thought it was, you know, I mean, it's a win-win no matter what, because we're getting the media coverage. Mm-hmm. So that, in my opinion, is a good thing. And I look at disclosure as a process, which that process has already begun. When we had our first UAP document that they released in 2021. But yeah, I watched the hearings last week, and the guy running the project seems like he's not really fully committed. I heard him use the term SEP multiple times, S-E-P, hoping that he investigates until it's somebody else's problem. So it really kind of showed me where his mindset was. He has the right people investigating this stuff, I believe. And one thing he said, he has two teams that are kind of working against each other, but it all works with each other. One's a scientific team and one's an intelligence team. And they're both looking into the subject in a different way. And then they take their findings and put it together, which I thought was excellent. You know, I thought that was pretty cool. I was shocked to hear in the last meeting that the funding wasn't all there yet. It was supposed to be like $21 million. They didn't even have half of it, but they
did. Oh, really?
Yeah. And they did address it this past time and said they finally got fully funded. So that was cool. But yeah, I mean, it's, he didn't give up great information. He still said, you know, there's nothing that proves that this is from an extraterrestrial race or something from outside our solar system, which I think is bogus. The evidence is there. It's been there for years. You know, he showed a video, one that was a true unidentified, and then another one where he kind of tricked us and then kind of explained what it was. So, I mean, it's definitely making traction. We're getting somewhere. And I was actually surprised to see the next day that the local news actually covered it. Both newses, the nation news and local. So, I mean, any publicity is good publicity, right?
Right.
I think it's a step, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, I think, you know, a couple of years ago when they released the, I think it was like 21 cases, and they made a big hoopla on, I think it was the Science Channel 2-hour episode. And I was just disappointed in and I got kind of blasted from my military buddies, you know, from the Air Force, because I kind of came down hard on, because, you know, they said 19 out of those 20 were weather balloons, you know, and I'm
right.
That kind of ticked me off, because every time you hear, they always want to classify it as when they don't know what it is, like a weather balloon,
right,
or a flock of birds, you know. But, you know, I like you said, you know, it is a positive. They are at least addressing the issue, you know.
Right. But I was disappointed, though, because the last time they had said that there was a certain number that they had originally investigated that were unidentified. And they could not find answers to. And he completely did not talk about that at all during this hearing. And to sit there and say that these things are not from, that none of them show evidence from being outside our world or otherworldly. Well, what about those ones that Arrow originally investigated and could not identify?
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows that they're trying to like not make a big deal out of it. And I think they're going to try to cover up any way they can and just make excuses up.
Right. It seems to me the increase of UAP and Bigfoot sightings, and also the hundreds of 411 cases. Do you feel any of these are connected or related?
I believe it's all connected in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
The one big case was a family that were out camping in the woods. It was a father, a son, and his wife, and they heard some noises in the woods. And they claimed that they had multiple different Bigfoots that were chasing them. And once they were fully surrounded, a UFO appeared above them and all the Bigfoots disappeared. It shined the light down on the family and then took the light away and then flew away. So I believe it's all connected in one way or another. And then same thing with, you know, we talk about portals with ETs and extraterrestrials. Well, you know, that's the high strangest 411, you know, it kind of looks like some of these people just walked and disappeared into nowhere like a portal. So yeah, it's all connected in my opinion.
As a MUFON member and a research team, are your studies and investigations only in the United States?
No, MUFON is worldwide.
I know MUFON is. I mean, on your own personal end.
So my personal end, well, I just joined a new part of MUFON, so that might actually start happening soon. The CAG member, which is a case assistance group where veteran field investigators help and assist with other cases, no matter where they are. But I'm also a MUFON ERT, which is the experience or resource team. So I can take cases from anywhere to help an experiencer. I just haven't had one yet. Locally, as a field investigator, you stay local. This way, you're better suited to know the area and what's in that area to be able to investigate that sighting. But as of right now, I haven't had any from MUFON's part. With my other projects, I have. But with MUFON, no.
Yeah, the reason I asked that is just yesterday, I was sent an article of a pilot, and I don't know if you heard about this incident, of a pilot and his plane that ended up missing over Australia in 1978. Both the pilot and his Cessna were never found. Now, his last documented radio contact was he was being played with by a UFO. It was above him, below him, and the last sound they heard on the radio transmission was a scraping sound and then nothing. So this happened during the largest wave of UFO sightings Australia has ever seen. So, I mean, have you heard about those cases? Or I mean, it seems like I get quite a few of those that a pilot or the plane is never found, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
after confronting a UFO, you know, whether it be in Canada or US or Australia, all over.
Yeah, I've heard cases like that here in the U.S. And you mentioned that scraping sound. That's like repeated. That's a similarity in a lot of those cases. They hear that scraping sound over the radio and then nothing. So that's something to pay attention to when these sightings happen like that, when they disappear. And that's kind of like, is it a portal? Are they flying into some kind of portal and the static is making that noise? It's really interesting. And then we had that one military pilot that went missing and you know, they couldn't find his craft. And the same thing happened. He had a scraping sound before his last transmission. So it's very interesting. I don't know if they're taking them or if they're flying into an area that is a mistake and disappearing, but it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, because each one of these cases, you know, you don't find any oil slicks or airplane parts or nothing, you know.
Just like the Bermuda Triangle, you know, same type of deal. And I believe that if there's portals and things like that in the Bermuda Triangle, I'm sure there's other places around the world where, you know, this is happening as well.
Now, do you get any cases like of hybrids?
Hybrids? Yeah, well, working with the ERT, on a daily basis, I work with experiencers that have either been abducted, implants in the part of the hybridization program. I just did a case yesterday described as a different kind of being that I, you know, haven't really heard of before. Very tall, not a gray, looked kind of like a Manus type deal, which is my first Manus case. So I haven't had one of those yet. Now I've worked with people that have been a part of the hybridization program that were actually taken again after their baby or they had a miscarriage or something like that. And years later, they're taken again and they're brought into a room with their possible baby that is a half hybrid, half human, you know, or half ET, half human. They say that ETs really don't have an emotional connection. We come to the conclusion that they bring the mothers in to give that emotional aspect to the hybrid children because the ETs cannot give that to them. Mm-hmm. So they bring the mother in to give them hugs and love and that emotion so they can continue to be okay. And then they send the mother back home and that's it. It's interesting.
Yeah, I had a past guest on from the Berkshires. I did a whole month on the Berkshires a couple of years ago. And I don't know if you watched it on Netflix, UFOs Over the Berkshires.
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's a pretty good show. It's it was on, I think, the second season on Netflix on the Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
Melanie Kirchdorfer was one of my guests, and she was abducted. And she's not writing a book. She's not doing anything to, you know, make money off of this thing. Matter of fact, she's not doing any more interviews because of the amount of press she's been getting. But she claims that these aliens use mental telepathy, communicating with her. And the time she was abducted to her return, how much time that was lost to what she experienced. You know, so time was really a big factor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Betty and Barney Hill, I mean, they lost 2 hours of their time. That's a big thing, the time loss, you know.
You know, and I had done another episode where I was talking about how, and I think it was on one of the shows I was watching, where a UFO was like at 24,000 feet and it went straight down into the water, into the ocean, in less than 3 seconds. So my thinking was there's no way that a human life can survive that impact at that speed.
Right.
How fast they can travel underwater. Now, I just started researching that on these submergible, you know, objects. And it seems like that you're getting your power from the water.
Yeah, I have heard that. And then it would make sense that that would be where what they're using to fly. And they're also a place to hide as well, because, you know, 80 or 90% of our world is ocean, you know, the best place to hide.
Mm-hmm.
We've only discovered 10% of it. So it makes perfect sense.
You were a writer for the MUFON Journal. What is that journal about? And is it available to the public?
Yeah, absolutely. It's available to the public. You can get the E1 where you get it through your email, or you can get a physical copy. But every month they put a brand new, I get the physical copy every month. But what they'll do is they'll put the top cases in it that in that month, in that journal, usually 5 to 6 really, really good cases. I do an episode once a month on them. And they'll usually put the statistics out for that month for each state, you know, each county, what the shape was of the UFO, how many came in from each state, descriptions of them. Also, it'll let us know how many ERT cases, how many landings and ET close encounters there are. And then also there'll be different, you know, for example, I've had a couple papers published in the journal just talking about UFO cases. I wrote one. It was called Understanding the Ways to Help an Experiencer. I wrote it as a tool for people that are working with an experiencer so they understand how to help them. But there's all kinds of good information in there written from all, you know, experienced veteran investigators, whether it has to do with sightings or abductions. And then there's also a part in that journal. Fran Ridge does it. He leads the MADARs, which track, that can only track UFOs or unidentified objects. They do not pick up on any reflections from regular aircraft, helicopters, drones, none of that. So they're unidentified objects, and anybody can have a MADAR unit and put it in their home. And you can actually get these to the point where PA is starting to do it now, trying to spread them out across the state so we can actually track the UFOs when they come in and where they go, which is pretty cool to read about that every month and how many cases they got. But I think it's like $7.99 or $8.99 for a physical copy. But if you're a member, you can sign up with that with the yearly membership and that. So it's actually pretty cool.
What would you think is your most compelling case you've ever worked on?
So it would have to be a case that I worked on for the project that I direct, Project BatTech 404. We investigate and research only electrical malfunction UFO sightings and encounters. I created a database, and I put together a team, and people can actually report their EM cases to us through that email. And I had a gentleman report to me about a modern day, a couple of years back, EM encounter that he had with an unidentified object up close and personal. He was actually driving his pickup truck. He was probably about 10 minutes away from his house. He's on the phone with his girlfriend. He hangs up the phone. He's listening to Sirius XM radio, which is satellite radio. And he gets to this clearing in a field, and he sees this object coming right over the tree line, you know, maybe 500 feet, 500 yards. And so he pulls over his truck And he goes to try to call his girlfriend because she's only a couple miles down the road to see if she can see what he's seeing. When he goes to pick up his phone, it's completely dead. It's not just out of service. The phone won't work whatsoever. So he opens his door to get out of the vehicle. And as his object's getting closer, he hears his radio shut off and he looks in and his satellite radio is giving him no signal, which that's extremely hard for him. I mean, you got to have some technical stuff for that. And this object starts coming at him and he has no idea what to do. And just when he's about to freak out, this thing turns and starts going in a different direction. Once it hit the tree line, his Sirius XM radio came back on. And he hopped back in the truck real fast and took off home. And when he got home, he had to actually take the battery out of his cell phone and put it back in to get the phone to work. So it just goes to show that these objects can mess with any kind of electrical, any kind of technology that we have to this date, which is really intriguing in a lot of aspects of it. I mean, we've done a lot of different research papers on this stuff and the cases we've gotten. I mean, they're pretty... The big cases we published on the website, so anybody can go look at them. But I mean, the nuclear weapon system bases with Robert Salas and ICBM nuclear weapons that get shut down. It's an important topic, you know?
Yeah. Is that the project you were talking about earlier? You're working on?
Yeah. Project BatTech 404. Yeah. We just came up on our 2 years. And so far we're in collaboration with CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies. We're also in collaboration with MUFON, the British UFO Network, and the UAP Medical Coalition as well. So it's great because we're all getting together and sharing data and information so we can give the best information out to the public and the community.
What was it called? BiTech?
BatTech, BATTECH, battery technology. Yes, you go to the website. It's projectbattech404.wordpress.com, and you can see all the published papers that we've written. We found some really interesting stuff before 1978, I think, was the year. I might be a little off. There was UFO sightings with at truck stops with these big tractor trailers. And we actually had UFO sightings to the point where there'd be a diesel engine truck and a regular combustion engine truck sitting next to each other during these sightings. And when the UFO would get there, the engine in the combustion truck and all the radio and headlights would turn off, but the diesel engine would continue to run, but the electronics inside would go off. So we're trying to look at, because after 1978, they changed the requirements for diesel engines and they updated it. And after that, diesel engines started being affected. So we're kind of trying to look into how these diesel engines were built before 78 to see how they were able to not be affected by this stuff. Maybe we can work with something that and figure out how we can stop that from affecting our technology.
Yeah, you had mentioned Boo Fog earlier. That's I had Dave Hodrian on my show recently, who's the president of the Boo Fog organization. And I thought it was pretty cool on a lot of the stories. I asked him for a few cases, you know, and he sent me like maybe 50. But he asked me which ones I'd like to work on. I think I sent him back like 15 back, and he said, if I did that, we'd be on there for 3 months, you know, because they're kind of in depth cases, you know. So okay, so I picked like six, you know. But yeah, that's where I got the hybrids from, and I have a few other people come on the show is talking about, you know, the implants and, you know, under little devices put under their skin, usually by their neck or wrist, or just unexplained. You know, when they remove it, it's a material they can't, you know, explain.
Yeah, it's they got that sealing around the implant, and what that does, it allows the body not to reject the implant. So there's no scars, there's no redding around it, and so people can't find these objects. And then once they take them out, they remove that membrane off of it, and it also stops giving a frequency, because they'll scan it when it's inside the body, they'll get the frequency. And once they remove that membrane that allows the body not to reject it, the frequency stops immediately. And the material of the implant usually is meteorite. Uh-huh. This is a meteorite. So it's definitely something not from here, you know?
Right. What are you currently investigating or working on?
So I also am a co-founder of another project, UAP Medical Coalition. Me and Ted Rowe, who is the director of NARCAP, we started talking about last year, about June, trying to do something for experiencers. And so we came up with this brilliant idea, and it's getting a lot of great feedback. We call it the UAP Medical Coalition, and our job is to educate medical professionals on exposures that experiencers get during UFO encounters. Because we've had a lot of people that we've come across over the years that are abducted or whatever, and they go to their doctor or they go to a medical professional to talk about this, and they either get sent to a behavioral health system or a mental institution, or they'll prescribe them an overabundance of medication just to cover up the symptoms and not really help what's really going on. So we actually got a huge team together now. A lot of different medical professionals are on the team. We created an entire forum that people can go on and really get educated on. We also have a YouTube channel, which for last weekend, we had our first panel of all medical professionals, ranging from medical doctors to nurses, psychiatrists, therapists, to talk about this subject, to really get the information out there. So we're writing forms up. We're getting people to talk about it more. And we're working on some really cool stuff behind the scenes now to try to get different. We just created a form that experiencers can fill out on the website. It'll have our name on it, and they can actually take that form and print it out if they want and take it to their medical professional and show them that they've went somewhere. This is what they're dealing with. These are the symptoms they're having. And I worked with the UAP Medical Coalition. So here's my document. And just by the therapist taking that document and looking at it, it also educates the therapist or the doctor on what's going on with experiencers. So that's the big one we're working on. And Project Bat Tech is in collaboration with that, because we're handling all the EM effects that people have. So it's just great working together, you know.
MUFON was founded in 1969. Wasn't that about the same time that Project Blue Book was ended?
Yeah, yes, it was. And it makes it look like it was something, but
yeah.
it actually started in 1967, which I found out a couple of years back.
Okay.
It started in a garage, and it had John Schussler, who was the main guy, and two of his buddies, and they brainstormed MUFON, which they called at the time the Mutual, the Midwest UFO Network.
Okay.
And so they called it that, and then it started to grow so fast nationwide that in 69, they officially named it the Mutual UFO Network, which is, you know, and it happened to be the time that Blue Book was ending, so it kind of looks a little funny, but it's not.
Well, you know, because they always had, like, Project Grunge, and, you know, so one ends, another one starts up, you know, so I just was curious if it doesn't seem like, you know, MUFON covers anything up where, I hate to say, Project Blue Book did, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, some people will say that MUFON hides stuff. And you know what? I've been with MUFON since 2019, and everything they do is out in the open. And they're really trying to do some really good work. Our director was just on Capitol Hill last year, working with the state reps and the congressmen and women to try to help them get the right information before they go into these hearings, so they're able to ask the right questions and to put in place the right system so that we actually get good research being done. Everybody assumed that when he was going there that he was working with the government, but that's not what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, right away they try to say that, but it was either we go, the oldest UFO organization in the world that's been investigating, we go and we try to lead these people in the right direction, or we just sit back and let them just do whatever and not know good information. So it was better that we went and did that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then we seen during the first hearings, the questions that some of these people were asking to the DOD and the guys that were supposed to investigate, and they had no answer for it, which was great to see that. You know, it was like they're telling them, we know more and you guys aren't telling us. So, you know, it was pretty cool.
So you were promoted, you know, in the MUFON organization. What's your title? What do you do?
So I am a certified MUFON field investigator, a certified ERT member, experiencer resource team, and I was just promoted up to CAG, C-A-G, which is our case assistance group. It's for veteran investigators to help out on cases that need extra help or a certain expertise. or someone that's just been, you know, around for a while that really understands how to investigate a case. Maybe it might be somebody that, you know, it's a little more than what they can handle, so they'll send one of us over there to help that person out. Or it might be something in my background that they need extra help with, and they'll send me over there to do that. But you got to be elected by your state director and get the okay that way. And you usually have to be in the field for a couple of years to be able to become a CAG member. So I was really happy about it. You know, that's pretty cool.
I know, like in 1994, we had an incident in our county, in Trumbull County, Ohio, you know, and they made it popular on the Art Bell Show, Coast to Coast Radio.
Okay.
In 1999. So 5 years after the effect that, you know, the law enforcement officers in my area. And it just so happens that two of the people in these different law departments were friends of mine. And I can tell you that one absolutely never believed in UFOs or anything like that, ghosts or anything, until that evening, you know. And it's kind of funny, even to this day, they can't say exactly what happened. You know, it's been, what, 30 years.
Right.
I thought that, you know, some of these cases I've been reading, like on MUFON and MUFOG and Science Network, you know, they're kind of like all similar, where the craft is, you know, you lose the power of your vehicle. Like he was telling me, in their cruisers, you know, they chase this thing from Trumbull County, Ohio, into Pennsylvania. And the whole of it, they lost it when it got over top of their cars in PA. It was like their power of their cruisers went out.
Right. You know,
they lost total. They couldn't move, like their body functions were like frozen.
Paralysis.
Right. You know, and yet the very next day they had to put in a report, their police report, said it was a weather balloon.
That's a shame.
You know, and like he was telling me, you know, how does something go, you know, traveling like 35 miles an hour over the highway at a slow moving speed to zip into outer space in a matter of 2 seconds, out of sight.
Yeah, that don't make sense.
Yeah, so it definitely wasn't a weather balloon.
Yeah, it's mind blowing that they, you know, I imagine all the different data and sightings that weren't reported that would really be able to help out with today's field, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing with what's cool about your organization, that people can come in and tell you an experience that happened to them, and not, you know, be labeled crazy by other people, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and we work like therapists, basically. You know, we try to be that shoulder they can lean on to be able to talk to somebody, because their family and friends, you know, usually make fun of them or don't want to talk to them about it. So it just allows them to be able to come and talk to somebody. If they want to get hypnotherapy, they can. We can refer them. We have those kind of people. You know, we have group therapies that they can go to, all kinds of cool stuff, reading material to help them out with their experience. It's better than just leaving somebody out there going crazy by themselves. And we also show them that there's a community they can be a part of. So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. You know, like myself, I've never seen a UFO. You know, I take the people's word that I know, you know, plus people that have other people that have witnessed it. And I never call anybody on my show, whether it's a ghost or Bigfoot or UFO. I never would say they're crazy or they're lying, you know, because they're expressing it. Because a lot of people just can't come on here and talk about what they've seen. You know, they might want to I'll tell you a story, but please don't use my name. You know, one of those, you know.
Right.
And I've seen that even when I went down to Pennsylvania last year. My wife and I went to the Kecksburg UFO Festival.
Okay.
And so it was pretty cool. I actually got to talk to some family members that their dad was home when these men in black came to their homes and just came in their houses and was checking their phones out and stuff, you know. And that was way back in, what, 1965, I believe. And they can remember, you know, a few of them, they didn't remember the UFO itself, but they remembered the story of just being in the house with these men in black suits coming in their home and questioning them, what did you see, you know? And
right. That's interesting.
And then one was telling me that, you know, how he checked his, cause they used a phone from their house to call somebody. And when they got their phone bill the month, their calls going out wasn't there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I've also heard stories about men in black using the phone and they wound up getting a bill that's really expensive because they had to dial outside the state.
Right. So you get a lot of, I just love, I love coming across stories that, I don't know, that I'm educated on. And you're always learning something new. You know, I'm sure you do too in the field you're in.
Absolutely. Yeah. When was the Kecksburg festival?
It was in July. I can send you the date for this year. It's coming up again.
Yeah.
They have it every year. And okay. They have the craft that they did a movie of from Kecksburg. And that craft is standing like on a pole
right
outside the fire department. And
yeah, I've seen the pictures of it, the model. Yeah, it looks really cool. I've been meaning to go up there. And if I'm going to go up, I'd rather go up when the festival's going on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I met Stan Gordon.
I'm getting ready to go to the Pine Bush UFO Fair. Yeah, it's the Pine Bush UFO Fair. There's in New York. It's this nice, really cool little town, and they have the UFO Museum there. And every year they hold it's literally a mile-long UFO fair. It's free. You just come hang out. People have merchandise. There's live concerts. There's free little lectures underneath the tent near the museum. All kinds of people, bookstores. I mean, it's great, and it's free. So that's the best part. You just go out and hang out. Nice little bars. Everybody's really nice. All kinds of UFO merchandise and people, book signings, all kinds of stuff. So pretty cool.
Yeah, the Kecksburg is free also. But when I went into the convention hall, I seen Stan Gordon, people still selling their DVDs and books. And I seen Stan. I said, oh, I seen you on TV. It was, I think it was on the UFO Witness. I think it was.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
And he was on one of the shows. And I like, well, I ended up buying this DVD from Kecksburg and I think one of his books. And then I had him on the show.
Cool.
It's interesting meeting other people, in that field and their experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, Pine Bush is a UFO hotspot, the Hudson Valley UFOs. It's right next to Pine Bush. So everybody up there, I mean, the whole town is a UFO town. So, I mean, everybody's houses, you'll be driving down the street and you'll see UFOs and aliens in people's windows. The little diner that's in the town, it's called the Cup and Saucer Diner, So it's really neat. And the museum's a walkthrough museum that they have you and show you all the different cool stuff. There's models and different stories of the stuff that happened in Hudson Valley, the UFO triangles. It's really cool. And then MUFON New York will be out there and a whole bunch of authors and people that written books, which is really cool. It's a great time. I go every year. I'm already booked.
Are you a speaker there this year or?
No, I just go to hang out and have a good time. I know a lot of the people, So it's like that once a year where we're all able to get together and hang out because we all live in different states. So it's neat.
What do you have? Anything coming up special? I mean,
we were trying to throw a conference here in Philly. I was doing, but we just actually had to cancel it due to low ticket sales, unfortunately.
Well, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a shame, man. I mean, you couldn't beat it for the price, $65.
Uh-huh.
All day. We had seven speakers. We had a Q&A. We had a buffet dinner, light lunch. We had free giveaways, 50-50 tickets, book signings, merchandise, and free drinks and refreshments all day. I mean, you couldn't beat it for $65. We didn't understand why they weren't selling.
Yeah, sometimes you have that,
Yep. We'll try again next year, though.
Where can people go to reach you?
Yes. So my podcast is every week. It's UFO Encounters Worldwide. It's on all podcast platforms and the UNX Network, digital broadcast radio on Saturdays at 8 p.m. My website is ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. That has all my information on there. My email, if you want to get in touch with me, a bunch of different UFO articles that I've written that got published. And then I'm on Twitter. You can find me very easy, and Facebook. Just type my name in. Twitter is AATPeak. And that's about it. In the process, about to have a book published, so that'll be out soon.
Yeah, and I'll put all your links in the bottom of this episode. And I want to thank you for being on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. That was a good time.
Thank you, Jesse Peake, MUFON field investigator out of Pennsylvania, for being on the show today when we were talking about the UFO Senate hearings That was the ones prior to the ones that just happened on July 26th. Speaking of those hearings, I will play that in its entirety on the next two episodes. And then I will add my two cents on what I thought about the hearings and what was said. I'm your host, Al Cooley, host of Ghost in the Valley. And thank you for coming in and listening. I appreciate it.